Good evening. I would like to compensate a little bit the request for more artists, but I think that we all have in common some concepts, and I will talk about some things that were already mentioned by Boris Groys and Anastasia Gacheva. Before I start, I would like to thank Mr. Boris Groys and Anselm Franke for inviting me to participate in this conference, and also the very, very kind staff of this institution that was really, really helpful. The flurry of the new theories and concepts that inspired Russian artists in the early 20th century provided a broad context in which artistic experimentation became able to move to any direction and challenge many facets of philosophical and social thought. At that time, the outbreak of occult literature, together with the boost of science fiction novels by Russian writers and Western authors translated in Russian, as well as the establishment of numerous theosophical and other mystical clubs in various cities, described as a veritable maelstrom of little religions, cults, and sects, allowed the scatological theories and utopian ideas to permeate the Russian society in a vertical manner. Those ideas that wishfully foretold the coming of the new man and the formation of social structures based on scientific advancement would become, according to Richard Stites, the key to the emotional force of the Russian Revolution. In a plethora of mystical theories that promised an optimistic perspective about the transfiguration of the human intellect and the beginning of a new era of spiritual life, Nikolai Fyodorov's Common Task stood entirely opposite to those nebulous, non-programmatical doctrines, with a meticulously elaborated, deeply humanistic, contained, and teleological, albeit extravagant, project. Scholars George M. Young, Christina Loder, and Alexandra Sarchich, among others, have pointed out and documented that the teachings of Nikolai Fyodorov were not unknown to artists of the avant-garde groups in the first two decades of the 20th century, during the fermentation of the new artistic proposals. After all, the two volumes of his collective writings were published in 1906 and 1913, respectively, and although the limited number of copies certainly did not guarantee wide public access to them, it is indicative of the fact that his work was considered an integral opus. While there is no direct reference to Fyodorov in the writings of Kazimir Malevich, his close friend, poet Velimir Khlebnikov, was indeed familiar with the philosophy of the Common Task, and Mikhail Matyushin, equally close to Malevich, was very much interested and well-informed in new concepts, occult or otherwise, and he was the one to introduce the theory of the fourth dimension as a parameter of analysis of painting in his essay concerning Gleize and Mechanzer's The Cubism in the Union of Youth Journal in 1913, a notion later adopted by Malevich in Suprematism. Ivan Kudryashov was personally acquainted with Konstantin Tsiolkovsky, Fyodorov's student and renowned rocket scientist, whereas Vladimir Mayakovsky was familiar with a Common Task, at least through the artist Vasily Chikrygin, who in the last years of his short life was utterly devoted to Fyodorov's project. Not unlike those artists' volatile relations with tradition and modernity, Fyodorov's Common Task draws upon Christianity, proposing all the while contemporary means to fulfill the ultimate end, that is the resurrection of the dead and the continuation of the course of humanity on the principles of kinship, solidarity, and love. This is the utmost duty of man, to advance to such an intellectual level so as to accomplish the scientific and technological achievements that will actualize this goal. This raises two major issues that would have a cataclysmic effect on the world as we know it. Bringing back the dead and achieving immortality means that the past, the present, and the future are merged. Thus, the notion of time is quintessentially shifted. Further, the matter of space emerges for merely practical reasons. The earth is not enough to accommodate the resurrected, the living, and the future generations altogether. Therefore, the infinite cosmos must be explored, conquered, and colonized. The Common Task essentially requires man not only to transform himself internally, but also to reconfigure his relation with nature as well as the conditions of his own physical presence in it. These notions of time, space, and the new man will be further examined in an attempt to trace points where Fyodorov's philosophy and certain concept of artists of the Russian avant-garde meet. As early as 1913, the so-called futurist poets and visual artists joined forces in an attempt to experiment on their idea of the synthesis of the arts, which resulted in the lofty theatrical play titled Victory Over the Sun, already mentioned, that was staged for two performances at the Luna Park Theater in St. Petersburg in December of the same year. A grandiloquent project, The Victory Over the Sun, was written by Alexei Kruchonik in collaboration with Velimir Khlebnikov, who eventually did not make it to join them for the preparations of the play, while Malevich created the costumes and set designs and Matyushin composed the music to be played on an out-of-tune piano. The plot evolves around the task of the future man to captivate and cast down the sun and establish a new order of things, a new state, an act that is processed by bringing chaos and disorder, by employing a full frontal attack against rationality and the laws of nature. In the words of Kruchonik, the futurist wish to transform the world into chaos, to break the established values into pieces and form these pieces to create anew. Already in the prologue of the play, written by Khlebnikov, the notion of time is being distorted as the past, the present and the future are being brought together as generations to redefine the viewer's perception of being in time. And I quote, past timers will tell you who you sometimes were in the past. Livers, who you are, beers, who you would have been, littlers, tomorrow will tell you who you are going to be. I unquote. The ability to bend the linear quality of time is the quintessential feature of the protagonist of the play, the traveler through time, who will later enter the scene in a plane crash. Not only he is an extra-temporal being, but he is also the factor of science and technology, given the fact that at that time, the aviation was the proudest achievement of technological advancement, which had very recently entered social life. And the futurist poets praised the aviator as a modern-day hero who had carried out Icarus's task. The traveler through time, and here he is. The traveler through time gets in a discourse with Nero and Caligula, who are merged in one person, and who represent a monolithic, unwilling to subject to change past, and displays his superiority over them. I quote, "I will ride through all the centuries," he says. "I was in the 35th, where there is power without violence, and rebels fight against the sun," I unquote. He warns them that nothing is the same anymore, that the conventional apparatus of cognition is no longer adequate to perceive the new reality. And I quote, "The lake is harder than iron. Do not trust old measurements." The traveler's capacity to overcome time allows him also to be transferred from place to place, to appear out of thin air in defiance of the physical laws. In Malevich's drawing, you see here, he is depicted as a machine-like being, somewhat metallic or made of a natural material, and radiant as an apparition from another dimension. The future men look accordingly dehumanized and thus imperishable. They are the ones who have advanced to a higher state of intelligence, employing science to go against nature's entropy. They will captivate the sun, the symbol of rationality, the emblem of logic and classicism, in a violent act of mutiny against reality. The sun is the absolute regulative force of nature. It administrates time in every aspect of human life. And by casting it down, the men of the future have become so powerful so as to assume the duty of regulating nature according to the needs of humanity. Fyodorov had asserted that, and I quote, "Resurrection is an overwhelming victory over space and time," and I unquote. And having achieved that, man would become able to manipulate the meteorological and astronomical forces, aiming ultimately to rearrange the universe. The capture of the sun is the capstone of the future man's revolt, as well as the milestone of the new era. In retrospect, Kruchonik in 1932 admitted that the basic theme of the opera is a defense of technology, in particular of aviation, It is the victory of technology over cosmic forces and over biologism. In a way, Fyodorov's future is one lacking historicality in terms of the human's relation to their past, which will cease to be past as the generations of the dead will be resurrected, and with the future, which will be their ever-present state, diverging from the process of intellectual, diverging from the religious concept of eternity. This is a matter of perception, which in turn is a part of the process of intellectual advancement. The disintegration of the established axiomatic principles of reality in order to perceive the undisclosed transcendental world became an important task of the futurist artists who had declared their opposition to conventionality and the standard form norms in art in their campaign against what appeared to them as obsolete, in their mission to, and I quote, herald the unknown, to rearrange life, and to bear man's multiple soul to the upper reaches of reality, in the words of Zdanievich and Larionov. In their manifestos of 1912 and 1913, the futurist poets of Hillel group proclaimed their rebellion toward common sense and introduced Zaum, the transnational language, as an instrument to express new sensations that were unknown to man until then. Through the fragmentation of the written word, the dissolution of narration, the liberation of the word from its meaning, and the invention of new words, they aimed at cutting the umbilical cord of tradition, that is to be detached from history, creating self-referential literary matter, impossible to explicate by present logic. Those words are entities of a new world, and they bring about new context where everything begins to sleep, according to Grudziądz. Everything begins to sleep, the conventions of time, space, etc. He goes as far as to compare the poet with Adam, who was assigned with the task to give names to all things in nature, an act that also interested Fyodorov, as it represents the dominance of man over them. Zaum language was evangelized as a universal language, as the one that would be spoken and understood by the unified future humanity, according to Chlebnikov's aspirations. In visual means, the Zaum method was adapted by the artists that contributed to Cubofuturism, which nevertheless was a style that emerged from directly from the amalgamation of the two movements imported to Russia from the West. The coalescence of time and space in the Cube of Futurist paintings is the basis upon which the composition builds. And if we examine, for example, Lyubov Popov's Traveling Woman, the dynamic motion implied on the painting, which in a way substitutes the anyhow abolished narration, seems to burst out from an invisible source in an endless whirl without beginning or end. Or one may even say that the bits of the past, present, and future movements coexist simultaneously, and they are integrated into the space. This kind of distorted, non-linear representation of the narrative in the spatial context has affiliations with the reverse perspective in Orthodox icons, as elaborated in the eponymous essay by Pavel Florensky, who maintains that, and I quote, there is a special system for the representation and perception of reality in icons that involves the transgression of the laws of perspective and proves the incorrect superior to the correct. The dissolution of and rearrangement of reality was the main property of Malevich's allogist phase right before he issued suprematism. Here, it is not the form that is fragmented into time and space, but the context of reality in which one perceives it is being challenged and put into irregular order. In the painting Aviator of 1914, the figure resembles very much the metallic textured traveler of the Victory over the Sun, not to mention that he was too a pilot, and stands seemingly suspended in the air in rigid position, frontal and flat, like most of the artist's figures and those depicted in icons. While the surrounding space is materialized, fragmentary, lacking any point of perspective, and any realistic analogies in scale. As all the elements of the subject matter are put together in a way that does not display any chronological, thus narrative, relation whatsoever, time is not even subtly implied. It is completely absent. The last syllable of the word apteka, pharmacy, appearing fragmented on the canvas, coincides with the first two letters of the surname of Vasily Kaminsky, who was an aviator and the poet of Hilea Group, and he was celebrated as a hero among the futurists after surviving an airplane crash. Not long later, Khlebnikov would write his poem, Ka, telling the story of his double who travels through time. The number zero on the hat of the aviator will very soon mark the new era in painting for Malevich. In his famous text for the introduction of suprematism at the last futurist exhibition of paintings, 010, in 1915, Malevich declared that he had transformed himself in the zero of form. The black square that he placed on the top corner of the room at the junction of two walls, as if in suspension in the void between spaces, was indeed the minimum of painterly matter, an absolute negation of content subjective to meaning, a quality unrelatable to human perception. Shatskikh has pointed out that Malevich's transcendence to abstract form as a means to interpret non-worldly notions, particularly in the white-on-white phase of suprematism, has connotations with the Lord's transfiguration on Mount Tabor in the New Testament. That scene is described in the Gospel according to Matthew as follows. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up in a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then, there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. The transfiguration took place short before the crucifixion and the resurrection, and was the act that revealed the divine, unearthly nature of Jesus to the apostles. According to George Patronios' analysis, the transfiguration scene depicts the merger of the human and the divine, of the tangible and the intangible, and it is a collective procedure that does not involve Christ exclusively, but it is a process that all humanity will go through in order to reach heaven. And I quote, "In the Taborian transfiguration, all nature and all that is in it take part. Not only the mind is transformed, but the body equally is. It is the metamorphosis of all humans and all creation," and I unquote. Fyodorov's concept of the advancement of humanity to a superior state does not stand far apart from that interpretation of transfiguration as a human task that addresses to all nature, and as does in his writings, as an act that opens the way to the resurrection. Further, the transfiguration of the Savior is witnessed by the three apostles and the two prophets, and in that very moment, the generations of the past and the future coexist in time. In the Orthodox tradition, the transfiguration is depicted with Christ appearing in the so-called mandorla or aureola, in Greek doxa, a glory, a geometric shape that signifies manifestations, the divine presence breaking in the earthly world by transcending time and space. For example, you see here the icon by Andrei Rublev, at the Cathedral of the Annunciation in Kremlin, Jesus is surrounded or coming out of a perfect circle and a star-shaped form which bear no affiliation to any worldly being, contrasting the natural landscape and the dramatic reactions of the apostles below. The Christ in glory of the school of Theophanes the Greek, as it depicts an epiphany rather than a narration of a biblical scene, natural elements or even an implication of space or time are absolutely absent. Instead, the geometric shapes dominate the icon in a golden background. Those forms serve not to symbolize, but to signify the non-referential, unfathomable essence of deity, which is abstract in terms that has no resemblance to any being. This concept has been elaborated by Maximus the Confessor, born circa 580 AD, who asserts that God is not or will never be resembling any natural being. Therefore, it is more appropriate to attribute to him the nature of not being instead of supra-being. In suprematism, the absence of the object makes way for extraordinary conditions of being. Non-objectivity allows the transcendence from known to unknown. Here there is a concept that Malevich and Fyodorov share. While in the Orthodox tradition and iconography, God descends to the world, assuming an earthly form in order to elevate humanity to heaven, both the artist and the philosopher consider it man's duty to advance to that higher state on his own. And I quote, "In transforming the world, I await my own transformation," Malevich states. And while in Orthodox transfiguration scenes, the divine appears surrounded by abstract themes, schemes in human form, so as to be legible by common sense, suprematism has rejected already the need to apply to common sense, therefore aims solely at those abstract elements that signify superior being. The suprematist paintings share that same non-temporality and non-spatiality found in icons, if we may use these terms, in this case conditioned by the liberation of the form from a narrative content, employing non-organic geometric forms into an infinite and undefinable background. Already by 1913, Nikolai Punin had supported the superiority of plain colored surfaces of the icons over the individualistic attitude of modern-day artists in their attempt to depict the natural world following their subjective view. Malevich promoted his artistic proposal as a way of perception of the world in higher dimensions, assuming the duty of showing it to humanity in order to enter a new era of being in which time and space are dissolved. And I quote, "Perhaps in the final day of my transfiguration, I shall assume a new form, leaving my present image behind in the dying green animal world." If we consider the transformation of man in a superior being of utmost intellect and the ability to regulate nature the first part of the plan, then the second part to the fulfillment of the common task is the rearrangement of the cosmos and the colonization of other planets. In the words of Fyodorov, "For the generations to come, the planets in space are the future residency of their fathers. The exploration of planets is the very preparation for those residences." And I unquote. The world would become a network of planets in which the resurrected and future generations, joined in a universal brotherhood, would be living in solidarity. But Fyodorov's plan does not stop there. His ultimate goal is to extract the celestial bodies from their natural orbits, to dismantle the solar systems and put them in different order that would serve the needs of humanity. The universe would take the form of a celestial cathedral shaped by the motion of the planets as navigated by humans. To accomplish this grandiose plan, astronomy, which contains in itself all sciences, must be applied to architecture, which contains in itself all arts. To create not just an image of the universe, but the very structure of the world in which decline will be replaced by resurrection. In turn, if we consider suprematist painting as a means to enable human perception to adapt to extra-temporal and extra-spatial conditions of being, then the transition of suprematism to architecture would be a way to accommodate to the new world in practical terms. By 1919, Malevich and his students at Vitebsk, the Unovis group, had started to produce suprematist architectural models, the Architectons and the Planeti. Not meant to be built particularly on the Earth, these buildings would fly freely into space and would be able to land on any surface, on any planet, according to their residents' needs and desires. Like the suprematist forms, which Malevich already considered self-sufficient sufficient entities that had reached such a level of perfection as to render them celestial bodies floating into the cosmos, the planeti were aerodynamic in shape and seemed to lack gravity, therefore they could be piloted through space perpetually. The Novice group believed that the transformation of the cosmos into a suprematist system to be their collective mission, a task that would affect any aspect of everyday life, starting from the Earth and aspiring to expand to the infinite universe. They declared their campaign in their enthusiastic manifestos. We bring new cities, we bring the world new things, we will give them other names. The innovators must unite without delay under the flag of the new art and build the world. From the 1920s and later on, the idea of space exploration was consolidated in a more practical and programmatic plan, and political parameters infiltrated an originally philosophical concept. From Ivan Kudryashov's paintings that convey sensation of cosmic environment to Lissitzky's bronze and Georgi Krutikov's flying cities, there is a wide spectrum of artists that committed to the idea of a technologically advanced future society that would populate new planets. In Fyodorov's project, this scientific achievement was only a part of a greater plan, a means to a greater end, a facility that would serve the needs of the entirely transformed humanity, the human that would have fulfilled his duty toward God. In that context, Malevich came closer to Fyodorov than anyone when he concluded that, and I quote, man is preparing on the earth to throw his body into infinity, and then further into his new orbits of movement towards the absolute. Man's path goes towards humanity and from there to God as perfection. Thank you.